Information-fueled, opinion-driven. This is the Dan Mandis Show, Super Talk 99.7.
105 on Super Talk 99.7, WTN, Dan Mandis Show. I just saw a really funny graphic on Fox News. You got Josh Earnest up there yammering about, and the graphic was White House not going to judge FBI's decision. Yeah, there's a shock. So we have a shocking video that is shocking, as a matter of fact. It is caught on camera, the death of 37-year-old Alton Sterling in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And I want to bring in our top cop, Kathy Hinners, who I always like to borrow from the Michael at Del Giorno show. Kathy, thank you very much for being there for us always. So you've seen this video. It is taking a back seat, I think, to a lot of the Hillary Clinton coverage right now and the Donald Trump coverage. But I'm wondering if this video is going to be one of those videos that is going to cause a huge racial war in this country. And let me set the stage very quickly. Sterling is 37 years old. He was shot dead by a Louisiana police officer. He's black, and the police officers, both white, were wrestling with him down on the ground. And this is all caught on video. You can see in the video, and Kathy, you saw the video, you can see Alton on the ground. You can see the police officer pull out his gun. And it's almost as I'm watching the video for the very first time. I'm watching this video, and I see the police officer pull out his gun. And I'm in my head, I'm thinking, my God, don't do it. You've got this guy, seemingly to me anyway, and that's why I want to have you on. But it looked to me like they have this guy pinned down. But they pull out the gun, and they shoot him not once, but five times. So he is dead. This is obviously causing a big problem in northern Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And I'm going to ask you, you've seen the video, you saw it. What were your impressions of the video?
Well, pretty much like you said, the first time I looked at it and I heard the officer tell him, bro, if you move, I'm going to, you know, kill you. So it looks horrible to begin with, and I have two schools of thought on that, because it's very hard to see,
yes,
you know, as they're struggling in front of that car. But if, in fact, supposedly he did have a gun, that the gun was removed after he was apparently deceased, he had, yes, a gun in a jacket. I don't recall seeing a jacket on him. I just see a red T-shirt. The problem with that is, if he did have a gun, did he attempt to struggle to get it out? And, you know, was he basically still a threat, because that's why they would have shot him. Now, that being said, in my estimation, they had him pinned down. There were two officers there. They were big guys. They had him pinned. It looked like they had him pinned pretty good. When the one retrieved his, you know, when he took out his gun and put it right to his chest and said, if you move, I'm going to kill you, and then you hear two shots. But then after the camera falls off, you hear three more. And I guess that's where the problem lies, and that's where it's going to be, because with the camera falling off, or supposedly falling off, what happened that made him shoot him three more times? If the guy's down, he's done. So it's really going to be, I think this could be the tipping point for a long, brutal summer, but I really think that it is, again, is not a what I would consider to be a good, you know, shooting. I don't know that there was cause to do it. If he had a gun, And he was a threat, okay, but, you know, you can't continue shooting someone once they're you know, down, the threat is eliminated. You got to stop. You know, you just can't keep you know, putting rounds into somebody. But it's going to be interesting to see when what the police officers say. You know, did he grab a gun? Did he have a gun? You know, I didn't see that. I didn't even see a jacket. But, you know, they're pretty blurry. Some of the videos are pretty blurry.
The U.S. Justice Department says they are going to open a federal rights probe into the killing. Let me ask you this. I couldn't tell when I was watching the video. I admittedly was watching it on my phone. Can you tell where Sterling's hands were? Is it possible, because remember, he was pinned down by those two police officers who are seemingly on top of him. Is it possible that Sterling was reaching for a police officer's gun? Can they use that? Please don't get me wrong in how I'm going to frame this, but can the police officers use as an excuse, per se, that that he was going for the police officer's gun, and that's why they opened fire?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, you know, so many things happen so quickly, and it depends on his state of mind. Did he have a gun to begin with? That's what the whole call was to begin with, that he had threatened someone with a gun.
Yes.
So, of course, they're going to go there with a different mindset. You know, they're going to be prepared to pull a gun because he may have one. But I think, you know, and this is so hard because being retired law enforcement, I always want to take the cop side,
right.
You know, but this time it doesn't look like, you know, they had him pinned down pretty good. Now, will he still struggle? And you know, I've been in fights where they'll struggle no matter what. Supposedly they tased him. I didn't see that happen. And that would have only brought him down. That would not have necessarily completely paralyzed him. So could he have been continuing to fight? Absolutely. But where was that gun on his person? You know, they had both of them down. And then my other concern was when I saw at such a close range, when I saw the police officer pull the gun and they're still struggling, you know, that gun could have been grabbed as well. So, that, you know, a couple of things there. You could tell they weren't seasoned officers. In my estimation, they were not seasoned officers, because in that close of a struggle, I don't know that I would have pulled out my gun unless, obviously, he had a gun pointed at me. But I saw a few different tactical things that were kind of interesting and could show inexperience. But I, from all, you know, from, I've watched it several times now, in five shots, I think that's going to be a tough one to articulate why they did that.
They said that they had tased him, and you'd mentioned that as well. When somebody is tased, when the video opens, essentially, he is standing, and it looks like they're—I don't know if it looked like they were arguing back and forth, but he was standing. If somebody is tased effectively, is that person automatically down on the ground?
For the 3 seconds or 5 seconds, I think, is the top. It used to be that you can tase someone. I have been tased twice. And it is a feeling that it does. It puts you down immediately. But it depends on the adrenaline. It can be, you know, if someone has drugs in their system, the taser might not even affect a person. It depends if the prongs went into clothing that was too thick to touch the skin. So he still was standing, though, and I saw a police officer, you know, rush him and tackle him. It was a good tackle, a solid tackle. He got him on the ground. So I take it that the taser either was not deployed or it did not work effectively. When you shoot those prongs into someone, they have to land basically on skin or on thin clothes so that you can feel, you know, they'll get the electrical pulse from it. But it's only a very short, you know, kind of blip of a few seconds, and in that time the person is completely, you know, everything's, the functioning of the muscles stop and you go to the ground. But I didn't see that. I saw the police officer tackle him, unless they tased him and it didn't affect him. And then that's kind of a whole other ball game, because what's in his system, that's, you know, he's not feeling the effects of a taser. So that's something else to consider.
Yeah, and they have done an autopsy on him, and he had a bunch of shots to the, I guess, the chest and the back. When they were on the ground, there was a lot of yelling back and forth. You heard the video, you saw and heard the F-bombs and the S-bombs and everything else. I had a hard time being able to tell how strongly Sterling was fighting the police. I had a hard time telling that. Can you tell, based on your experience, how much resistance he was giving?
Well, at first, it obviously they had a big struggle. You could see the car, the vehicle that he kind of fell on initially, you know, moved. So that, and he seemed to be a big man. What I'm concerned about is, you know, two shots as he was laying on his back to the chest. And then, you know, did he get up, or, you know, attempt to get up and somehow landed on his back, and then three more shots were shot at him in the back? That's going to be a tough thing to prove, because, you know, we are taught you never shoot someone in the back. You know, if he's down twice and then he continues to fight, I suppose they had to do what they had to do. But if he wasn't feeling a taser and then he was shot twice in the chest and that didn't take him down, you know, then again, you look and you say, this guy, for whatever reason, was not, he just wasn't being stopped. So, you know, maybe it was necessary then to continue to shoot him. But I only saw him laying on his back, or what appeared to be laying on his back, and two, you know, then you hear the two shots. So if he continued to struggle, that's going to be a whole nother ball game, because you have to stop the threat at some point.
Sterling was sentenced to 5 years in jail for marijuana and weapons possession in 2009. He has reportedly been arrested several times over the past two decades. I'm going to ask a question I believe I've asked you before, Kathy Hinners, and that is, they've got these two officers, and they've got this guy pinned down. Is there a way to disable him without killing him? That police officer, it looks to me like he pulled out that gun. And did he shoot him in the chest? I guess that's what the autopsy shows, that he shot him in the chest. I hate to ask such a silly question, but I don't know if it's a silly question. Isn't there a way to disable somebody without killing them?
Well, that's what the taser is for. You know, when hopefully you can gain compliance after someone is tased. It's a very painful thing.
Yeah.
So usually people do comply. If, you know, whatever is in his system or the strength or adrenaline is so much in this person that the taser did not stop him, and then two shots to the chest did not stop him, you know, they really don't have much of a choice. You have to stop the threat because your own life is in danger. If he had a gun, you got to do what you have to do to save your own life and to preserve the life of others in the area. So, you know, they had to do what they had to do if, in fact, he was still a threat. If he didn't have a gun, you know, and they still felt that they needed to use deadly physical force, they'll have to articulate that, and it could be very difficult to do that. Unless he continued to struggle after the camera is gone, we don't know what happened, but if he continued to get up and to go after the police officers or continue to pull a gun, then they had to do what they had to do. And that's where I'm wondering what the story is going to be and why the cameras fell off the officer and then what happened after that. That's going to be the difficult part to hear.
Yeah, and I think when you have, if you're the person holding the camera and this video was taken by someone a few feet away and just as a bystander was videoing this, the equipment that the police officers had, the body cameras the cops had, fell off, apparently. So they're not going to be able to use that unless it fell off at a point where they can get some sort of an angle to figure out exactly what happened. Let me ask you this. We don't know what kind of resistance this guy Sterling was giving to the police officers. You'd mentioned earlier that you don't know what was in his system. We can't tell from the video how strong Sterling was or the kind of effort that he was making trying to get up against those police officers. Can a police officer tell, they've got this guy pinned down, can a police officer tell if he's on some sort of a substance that is going to make him stronger, let's say? How easy is that for a police officer to tell?
Well, there's a couple factors. You know, you can usually tell if a person's on, you know, cocaine or crack or something like that. But if it's crystal meth or something, angel dust or whatever the case may be, it can be very difficult, except that the strength of a person really kind of doubles, if you will, because if a person continues to fight and they have no fear and they're not feeling pain, then you know something's wrong, that there is something going on with that person, that he's not stopping after being tased or after being shot twice. So, you know, you have to figure in, was there some kind of narcotic in his, you know, in his system, or was it just pure adrenaline? You know, I mean, a lot of people are programmed to just fight, you know, you just fight to the death. And I think, you know, the police officers, adrenaline is a funny thing, and it just brings out a lot of strength in a lot of people. And so I think that's, you know, something to look at with this man. He was a big man to begin with. But the officers appeared to be fairly good size themselves. So, you know, you're talking adrenaline on both sides. And so, you know, if he had the classic, you know, look of what a crack person on crack would look like, it's more paranoia and something like that. It's not necessarily strength. But there are some drugs that would promote him to be stronger. So it's going to be hard to tell, but it could have been just adrenaline and I'm not going back to jail type thing.
Yeah. We're speaking with Kathy Hinners, author, by the way, of The Muslim Brotherhood, The Threat in Our Own Backyard. I want to segue to a situation that's happening maybe at the Rio Olympics. They're trying to find out where a former Gitmo detainee is, a guy by the name of Abu Wael Dihab. And their worry is because this guy is, again, a detainee, and he has dropped off the radar. And the worry is that he might be at the Olympics, and he might be plotting something. Talk a little bit about the fear that they may have at the Rio Olympics. They've had a lot of problems already as far as security goes. They've been unable to, for folks who don't know, they've been unable to pay the police officers. And so the police officers there in Rio have said, you know what, if you're coming to the Olympics, we may not be able to protect you because we haven't been paid in months. So you put that on top of the situation where they're thinking that this Abu Wael Dihad might be plotting something at the Olympics. What do we know about this guy? What do we know about the threat that is being made against the Olympics? Because we know that ISIS has called for attacks at the Olympics in Rio de Janeiro.
Well, the thing with the Gitmo, detainees, when they leave there, the percentage of them going back to the fight, whether it's with Al-Qaeda or the Taliban or whoever, is pretty high. The percentage they know is pretty high. They have grown to hate Americans even more by being detained and whatever, happened, while they were detained. I'm not surprised. I mean, if the world knows that security is going to be very lax and that police officers are not getting paid, and the ones that are there, do you really think they're going to put their lives on the line if they're not getting paid or they're getting paid very little? So I think that it's an open book at this point. Everyone else in the world knows security's lax. They're standing there with signs saying, "We aren't getting paid. Don't come here. Your security is at risk." I think that is an open door and a very big target for ISIS to go in, or any terrorist group to go in there and destroy people. I think at this point they ought to be rethinking the Olympics. I think that it's just a sitting duck. I think any of the, whether it's the athletes or the people that are there to watch them, I think it's just opening a can of worms that right now, the way ISIS has been hitting constantly in the Middle East, I think it's just giving them an opportunity to do a lot of damage and a lot of hurt to a lot of people.
Yeah, and the amazing thing is, not to go down the rabbit hole of the Olympics, but they got the Zika virus problem there. They've got the waters that are like, people are saying it's like toilets. Now we got this dude, this terrorist who is gone, and they think he might be plotting against the Olympics. There's so many different reasons why they should just say, you know what, we'll try this again in 4 years. Talk about, though, generally speaking, these Guantanamo Bay detainees who are released and end up going to places like Uruguay, for example, after being freed by U.S. authorities. Does the Obama administration not understand that when we send these terrorists and these detainees to places like Uruguay, they're simply going to disappear? What is it the Obama administration doesn't understand? Is there an expectation that Uruguay is going to keep an eye on these people?
No, absolutely not. And I believe that this administration knows fully well what they're doing. As he releases these prisoners, he has a goal, and he's going to get to that goal no matter what, whether it's safe or not. So he's just releasing these prisoners to countries that we may have a relationship with them, but it isn't the best. I mean, they have a struggle within their own country to keep the peace as it is. I mean, a lot of these countries are filled with drug, mafias and things like that. So bringing in, Islamic terrorists isn't helping the point. But I think he's just doing it. He's putting them in odd places, or they're being released in odd places. And, no one has time to watch these prisoners. They come off as, oh, we're going back and we're going to be good people. And then, like this guy, they disappear. One of them even had said that he was a milk and honey farmer and was going back, to his country to raise, milk and do honey. This is like a stretch. This is not what they're programmed to do. When you're talking, a lot of them were officers under bin Laden. They're not looking to, repair themselves and repair their minds and go on about a life. They're looking to do damage to the oppressor, who was America, who detained them for years. So I don't buy for one second that they're, they're rehabilitated at all.
Kathy, thank you very much for analysis on both stories. You have a great afternoon. It's 125 on Super Talk 99.7 WTN. Kathy, of course, author of Muslim Brotherhood, The Threat in Our Own Backyard, and also DailyRollCall.com.